Hey, it's Andrew Siciliano. It is finally time for Jackson Dart, right? How do the 49ers fight through yet another injury? And Greg Rosenthal previews the trip to Ireland. Frank Schwab, Charles Robinson do the heavy lifting. Inside coverage coming up next. Are you ready to overreact? Should. It is a Monday after week three, and it is another edition of Inside Coverage on Yahoo. We thank you for watching. If it's the podcast and you're listening, subscribing and liking and sharing and all those fun things. My name is Andrew Siciliano, away from the home office. If you couldn't figure it out, I'm in a lovely, lovely hotel room in Cleveland, Ohio, after the Browns' thrilling victory, 13-10 over the Green Bay Packers. Back in the home office coming up tomorrow. Just when you think you have the NFL figured out, just when you think you know and you have a feel for every one of these teams and how these games are going to go, a week three happens. Frank Schwab, Charles Robinson, once again, it is, and I've said this 1,000 times, the world's greatest reality show. Unlike a lot of reality shows where it's just, you know, you put people in a box and they, you know, act like jerks to each other and, hey, let's see how they react and they're talentless and no one cares and you're there for the awkwardness and the drama. This reality show is the best reality show there is because they're talented people and you can't figure out the results. And Frank, Sunday was another example of that.
18 one-game seasons, as I say, like we overreact, we go crazy on everything. And no better example than the Atlanta Falcons 7 days ago. We're like, oh my goodness, the Atlanta Falcons, that Sunday night win, their defense is here. Today, we're like, what are the Falcons doing? Michael Penix stinks, they're awful. Like, it just changes from week to week, and that's why we love it, and that's why we sit here and talk about it every week.
You can sign me up for any time. I see a 340-pound man jump over a line, block a kick, and then return it for a touchdown. I will watch that on a loop forever. You cannot see that anywhere else. There's no other sport, I would argue. I know the NBA, everybody always says the NBA is the greatest athletes on the planet. There's nowhere else you're going to see a man the size of Jordan Davis do what he did on Sunday. It doesn't happen anywhere else.
Jordan Davis, by the way, a hero to a lot of people, let's say, maybe because the Eagles were -3.5, and that was the biggest miracle cover of all time.
What a crazy swing.
I love how Jordan Davis also told our friend Mike Garofolo afterwards on his interview on NFL Network. He said, man, I have not run that fast since the combine, since I had to do the 40 at the combine. He had lost some weight. Clearly, that had been one of the issues. Vic Fangio, hey, dude, lose some weight. And clearly, getting in shape and losing some weight worked because he looked like Usain Bolt running down the middle of the field. Nobody was going to catch Jordan Davis. Nobody. He got in the end zone. That was one of the more thrilling, not maybe results, although I did have the Rams winning it, one of the thrilling endings of the week. We'll get to that one. We'll break down all these games coming up shortly. Want to get the news here on a Monday night, however, before we start looking back towards Sunday. Some bad injury news. And look, that's always kind of the case on Monday. Having done these shows for years and years and years on Monday, it's always like, all right, well, who got hurt? And that's the news. Most notably, it's Nick Bosa. And as we're coming on the air tonight, Kyle Shanahan confirmed Vic Bosa, ACL, he's done for the year. So devastating. It's another season-ending injury for Nick Bosa. And it's a huge blow to the 49ers, who obviously at 3-0 now, they survived once again with Mac Jones. They are a better team with Nick Bosa on the field. And also, two big injuries here for the Cowboys. Now, neither is season-ending. But Charles, as we come on the air, Brian Schottenheimer confirms that, yes, CeeDee Lamb has an ankle sprain. He's going to miss multiple weeks. And that rookie guard, Tyler Booker, who's already been one of the better rookies in the NFL, in the middle, the interior of that Cowboys offensive line, he too is going to miss multiple weeks.
Yeah, I mean, it's devastating. And we can talk about any one of these three. I mean, they're all huge injuries. The Bosa one, I thought it was interesting. You know, Nick Bosa already suffered a season-ending ACL once. It was in the opposite knee. So now he's got, you know, he's going to have two surgically repaired knees that he's playing on. And, you know, for Robert Saleh, the defensive coordinator there for the 49ers, I mean, they were carrying that team. That was, to me, if anything, through all the injuries, all the problems the 49ers had, the surprise to me this season was that Saleh and that defense, it was a top five unit. They really were carrying games, with all due respect to particularly how Mac Jones has performed subbing in for Brock Purdy. Now, all of a sudden, you take Bosa off the field. You know, Mykel Williams, the first round pick, you're going to have to get more out of him. You know, Bryce Huff, there are going to be other elements. Don't let Fred Warner get hurt. I mean, I would wrap him in bubble wrap, keep him away from anything, because you cannot afford to lose him. You know, we can get into the Cowboys injuries. When we get into the Cowboys injuries, somebody's just going to have to explain to me why you would ever run a gazelle wide receiver out of your backfield as a running back. We can talk about what Brian Schottenheimer said to defend that, but that play in and of itself, as soon as it happened, I thought, this isn't Debo Samuel. He's not built like that. What are they doing? And then the injury occurs with a high ankle sprain.
Yeah, a bad look. I do want to talk about the 49ers real quick, because the Bosa injury clouds that this has been one of the most impressive stories in the NFL so far. When you look at the injuries they have had, we have come on every week on this show and said, how are the 49ers this unlucky? How are they? Juwan Jennings, George Kittle, Brock Purdy, Trent Williams has been banged up, and now you lose Nick Bosa. But yet that team is 3-0. I completely have all the respect for Kyle Shanahan and what he has done. I know it's dumb to talk about awards after 3 weeks, but if you're voting on NFL Coach of the Year, Kyle Shanahan is that dude. He has kept this team together with scotch tape, but there becomes a breaking point. And when you lose a Nick Bosa, that defense is so young now. As you said, Charles, Fred Warner, it's Fred Warner and a bunch of kids basically out there. And we all thought that defense would take a huge step back. All the credit to Robert Saleh, who's a heck of a defensive coach. He's a really, really good coach. But also just having a difference maker like Nick Bosa. We saw it week one when he forced a big fumble on Sam Darnold. He's one of those dudes that could just wreck a game. He's an annual defensive player of the year candidate. And now you got to go forward without him. I respect what Shanahan's done, respect what Saleh's done. 3-0 is remarkable given their injuries. But I just wonder if this is the breaking point. You lose a Bosa. That is so, so hard.
Sorry to cut you off, Ryan. They get the Jaguars in San Francisco this week, which is an interesting game. The Mac Jones, well, Brock Purdy is going to practice, Kyle Shanahan said Wednesday. So it looks like there's a better chance next week that he's playing. Obviously, he's missed the last two games. But if not, it's the Mac Jones revenge game, if that's even a game. Because remember, Mac Jones finished down the stretch last year when Trevor Lawrence was hurt and was the quarterback in Jacksonville. Totally different staff. Talk about bubble wrap. I would put the bubble wrap around Christian McCaffrey. He had 27 touches yesterday. That is his standard workload these days. I mean, he is the offense. Obviously, there are other pieces there. Ricky Pearsall's emerging. But I get anxious when his number of touches keeps going up and up and up. When it comes to running backs, there were two season-ending injuries for running backs around the league yesterday. James Conner is done for the year in Arizona. Their offense certainly has issues. They lose to the 49ers. Marvin Harrison admits that something's not right, and he's not helping the team. He's dropping passes left and right, including a beautiful ball from Kyler, you know, on a deep over where he just dropped it. Looked like he didn't even know how to use his hands, and that looked bad. And then Najee Harris, torn Achilles. You knew it as soon as you saw it. That's a devastating blow. He's not the number one back, but he's a valuable veteran on that team, along with Omarion Hampton, the rookie out of North Carolina, in the backfield. The Chargers are 3-0. We'll talk Justin Herbert and the MVP a little bit later. And Herbert made a throw yesterday. Frank, I know you wrote in your Winners and Losers that there aren't many quarterbacks who can make it. I would take it a step further. I don't know of any quarterback who can make that throw in the NFL.
Yeah.
Going to your left, hand in the face, flipping the hips, and then hitting the ball perfectly into the end zone. That was beyond impressive. We'll get back to the Chargers in a second. I want to get back, however, Charles, to how you kind of started this whole thing, and that was the Eagles and the Rams. Now, I said I thought the Rams were going to go in there and win the game. I thought the Rams felt disrespect is the wrong way to say. They just felt like they had a score to settle. No one's disrespected them, but they felt like they could have, should have, would have won in the divisional round last year.
Yep.
They felt like they absolutely were bullied when they lost at home last year to the Eagles on Sunday Night Football late in the season, and they wanted to prove that they were the better team. The Rams proved they could hang with the Eagles and beat the Eagles. The problem is they didn't beat the Eagles. They settled for field goals, and those field goals got blocked. And as good as they looked in the first half, they fell apart in the fourth quarter. They blow a 19-point lead. And you come away from this going, all right, the champs are still the champs. Or do you come away from this, Frank, and I'll start with you here, and say, no, we've seen yet again that this Eagles team is quite beatable.
I think the Eagles are a little beatable. But remember, when it's last September, they were the same way. And then they got going. And they're still 3-0. What I took away from this game, even though the Rams lost, we saw the Rams ceiling. We saw this is how good the Rams can be when they're playing at their best. And for 2.5 quarters, that looked like a team that could win a Super Bowl. They were that good. The Eagles had -1 net passing yards in the first half. They were out of sorts. They were getting run over on defense. Stafford was making plays to both of his great, great receivers. The Rams defense up front looked really, really good. Now, the Rams do have a deficiency. Their cornerbacks aren't very good. It kind of got exposed late in the game by A.J. Brown, especially. But look, the Rams are going to learn from this. They're going to move on. It's a week 3 game. But what I take from this is if the Rams can hit that gear again, and they're going to remember this lesson, boy, the Rams are good. And Eagles will be good too. I'm not worried about them. It's just early in the season. Their offense has really not got on track. They're going to be fine. But what I take out of this game is, yes, the Rams lost, but the Rams could absolutely beat anybody in the NFL. They showed that. They just couldn't close the door.
Well, and their defensive front is, I mean, it's unbelievable. When I went through in training camp, yeah, I mean, Jared Verse was destroying the practice that I watched. I mean, I sat there and I looked at him and I said, okay, you know, he's you're never going to get Aaron Donald back, but this guy could be a defensive player of the year candidate. You have Fisk, you have Kobe Turner. I mean, you just the front end of that defense is talented. It's deep. I think when you look offensively, I had a chance to talk to Sean McVay. One of the things he told me, he said, look, you know, the depth in our backfield, we like a lot. You're going to expand the role for Blake Corum going forward. You'll see, he said, especially, you know, once we get into gear in October, November, we'll start to expand more of what he can do. I think McVay would like to see them be a more run dominant team than they have been. Puka Nacua's looked like, I mean, you could argue he's been the best wideout in football this season thus far. So there's no doubt to me that ceiling's there. But, you know, I would say too, watching this game, they did not adjust well to Jordan Davis. The field goal units, there were multiple kicks almost blocked, right? And
yeah,
I will say this. Not everybody has a Jalen Carter and a Jordan Davis and can put them next to each other and basically say, crush the center of the line, you know, get length, get high, and do what you do as an athlete. So the Eagles do have that advantage, but that's clearly something on special teams that the Rams are going to need to look at cleaning up pretty quickly. And Frank, as you said, I mean, one thing for the Eagles I also was I thought was thought-provoking is, hey, they found A.J. Brown again, right? Like, he bullied them. He bullied the Rams in that fourth quarter. I think that's a big positive for the Eagles. But to me, I would not be surprised if we end up seeing this rematch yet again in the NFC playoffs. These, to me, looked like these are the elites, right, of the NFC right now. That's how you got to feel.
Yeah, sorry, Frank. I was waiting for you there. It's okay.
Frank's notes here. Left speechless.
I just want to reiterate. If we do see this rematch in January, the Rams can absolutely win that game, even in Philly. Yeah. That's what I learned yesterday. Look, they had a field goal blocked. That stinks. They blew a 26-7 lead. That stinks. But I came away from that game very impressed with the Rams, even in a loss.
Are you guys confident in Stafford's health?
Credit.
That's a thing.
I got to ask you guys.
Stafford did grab his back yesterday. You saw that, right? Stafford took a hit. He kind of grabs his back. And you're reminded immediately, like, oh, yeah, that's right. Remember August. So I know Stafford's going to answer the bell. I know he's going to play, again, one of the toughest dudes in the NFL. But, yeah, that absolutely is a concern. How can he last for 17 games and playoffs? You have to wonder about that at his age, but he looks great. Like, he's playing as well as he could play. You talked about this, Charles. That Rams offense is, all right, we got two receivers. That's it. We're not going to throw the ball to anybody else, but you can't guard these guys, so we don't care. Like, it's just Nacua Adams.
Good catches.
Their route tree is so narrow, and they don't care because they're like, you can't stop Puka Nacua, so why should we go to anybody else?
The 19-point comeback for the Giants, or I'm sorry, for the Eagles, was their largest comeback since the Miracle of the Meadowlands. So we need to give them credit. They found A.J. Brown, as you said. It was back to bully ball, except unlike last year in the fall at SoFi on Sunday night, that was bully ball with Saquon. This was bully ball with A.J. Brown. And he's not going to be reading books on the sideline on the bench in the second half against the Rams. They finally woke up and they used him. And Jalen Hurts completed passes downfield, completed passes in the middle of the field to Dallas Goedert, like we know he can do. I just feel like there's still a reluctance to unleash him that way. They're going to rely on the ground game, but Saquon's averaging 3.3, and we all knew he wasn't going to run for 2,000 yards again. Teams are going to adjust and take away the run as best they can. Rams are able to do that. You held the team to 33 yards in the first half. You had a 19-point lead, and you lose, which is – talk about Packers. I mean, that was devastating, but what the Rams did, 33 yards in the first half, 19-point lead in the second half, and you lose. That is a gut punch. And now you go back home, and for the Rams, you face Daniel Jones and the 3-0 we never punt Indianapolis Colts, which when the season began and you looked at the Rams' home schedule, it's been better in years past. As a Rams season ticket holder here, you didn't circle the Colts on the schedule week four. That one's now all of a sudden interesting, with Indianapolis winning yet again and Jonathan Taylor running wild. Also interesting, gentlemen, let's get to what we saw Sunday night. Not the Chiefs, and look, the Chiefs get their win and they avoid the 0-3, and they're not going to be that team that goes from 0-3 to making the playoffs, and no one's ever done forget that narrative for now. They didn't look that good. Patrick Mahomes is throwing passes backwards, but they beat the Giants because the Giants look pretty bad, especially offensively, other than Cam Scataboo, who is awesome. And if he didn't sell a gazillion jerseys last night, I'd be stunned. But Russell Wilson did look good. And Jackson Dart, when he came in, he's not allowed to throw the ball. It's just running these RPOs, running. He looked better. And you know that that's the future. And that last red zone possession was as depressing a thing as I had ever seen for Russell Wilson. Throwing the ball out of the back of the end zone. It was absolutely depressing. It was awkward. It was uncomfortable. The crowd shots of fans looking just slack-jawed, like, what is going on here? And finally today, it seemed as if Brian Daboll kind of dropped a hint and let us know that, yeah, something might change.
After one day, any thoughts on what you're going to do with quarterback moving forward?
Yeah, we just watched the tape here. Paul, we're in the meetings with the players right now. Like I said yesterday, you know, in order to improve the passing game, and I'd say that was the number one thing we needed to improve from yesterday, as a collective, everybody's got to be, you know, doing exactly the right stuff. So it's not all on one guy. There's multiple reasons why, you know, certain plays didn't, you know, come out the way we want them to come out, and we'll continue to do that.
Charles, you know what I didn't hear there? Russell Wilson is definitely starting against the Chargers.
Yeah. I mean, you can kind of see the writing on the wall here. If it's not now, it's when. And I think when you talk about Dart, I don't know if I'd throw him in going against the LA Chargers next week, but week five now looks enticing when you sit there and you stare at the New Orleans Saints, particularly when you consider after week five, it's like the Eagles, the Broncos, and then the Eagles again. I don't want to stick Jackson Dart in that stretch to start. So if I'm going to get him, you know, on the road, get some traction under his feet, I would hope to do it against the Saints. But, you know, look, I think what was really interesting in that game, there were a couple of things. Number one, I'm looking at Malik Nabers and I'm watching Russ struggle, and I'm seeing Malik Nabers, the body language looks bad, the interception Russ threw into the end zone. Now, granted, Malik Nabers was falling backward. I don't know how much he could have done in that situation. He certainly wasn't pushing himself to play defensive back in that scenario when that interception occurred. Excuse me. And then there was one other thing that I thought that was notable. Mike Tirico and Chris Collinsworth, nonchalantly, but kind of specifically, basically said on the broadcast, hey, everybody we talked to in the building, and I'm paraphrasing here, sure seems to be really excited about the Jackson Dart era beginning. And I thought, Okay, man, you're not really supposed to say that because when you go through pre-pro,
we don't get anything in production meetings.
Yeah, you go through pre-pro,
worthless.
Yeah, they certainly seem to have gotten something there, and then they said it on air, which I was a little struck by. It just feels like it's slipping for Russ at this stage, and at the very least, especially from the neighbor's standpoint, I think you got to make the change before Malik Nabers makes you make that change by saying something, which he has not up until this point.
Man. Last week, I sat here and I kind of took back all of my things I had been saying about the Giants have to start Jackson Dart. Just start him week one. Just start him now. I took it back. Well, I take back my take back, okay? Because we have seen Russell Wilson in week one and in week three, 8 quarters of football, no touchdowns for the offense. And he's just looked like the worst quarterback in football. Now that Deshaun Watson's not playing anymore, Russell Wilson looks like the worst quarterback. Except week two, where he threw for 450 yards, I come away and just say, wow, the Cowboys defense might really just be that bad. Like, they made Russell Wilson look like Dan Marino in 1984 somehow. Other than that, though, Russ has just shown nothing. And at some point, he kind of alluded to this, Charles, with Malik, but I think it's everybody. You risk losing the locker room at some point. You're already on the hot seat.
Absolutely.
Like, you can't. Everybody knows when Russ isn't playing well, and he's not. He couldn't even get Malik Nabers the ball last night. And I know the Chiefs did a great job. Spagnuolo had a good plan, all that kind of stuff. But they couldn't get any passes to his receivers.
And Frank, let me. I'll give this to both of you guys. I'm sitting there and I'm looking at the depth chart. I'm watching Cam Scadaboo, the dude's like a fire hydrant with legs, right?
Awesome.
Playing right now. And I'm sitting there and I'm going, okay, maybe it's time to start that era. Cam Scadaboo, Jackson Dart, Malik Nabers, Theo Johnson, who's a tight end who I really like a lot and think has a ceiling to him. There are young pieces there. You do kind of feel like, hey, if you get all these young guys together and you start it and you're moving in that direction, if I'm Brian Daboll, I'm saying, we do have a young core. Maybe this is savable in terms of my job if I can start to get some chemistry between these young guys.
And I just think, Charles, it would be a tragedy if Brian Daboll gets to a point where he got fired and never used Jackson Dart. Because if they keep playing like this, at some point, at some point, Brian Daboll, who is in self-preservation mode, we talked about this a lot. This is not a revelation. At some point, he has to just say, what do I got to lose? Russ has had a great career. He was on Hall of Fame path at one point, but he just ain't that dude no more. What am I going to do? Just keep putting him out there because he had one big game against a miserable Cowboys defense? I'm going to lose my job while I watch him get no touchdowns with my offense? At some point, you have nothing to lose. Yes, I get it. Jackson Dart's development is huge. You don't want to set him back, but Jackson Dart is no worse in the present right now than Russell Wilson. Like, he can at least give you some. And I thought the whole, we're going to put Jackson Dart in for two plays and the offense moves, but now we're going to put Russell Wilson back in the game.
Yeah.
It doesn't do Russ any good. It doesn't do Dart any good. It doesn't do the team any good. Like, just scrap that. Like, play Dart or don't, but I think they got to play him. And I think it's got to be this week.
This week's a tough matchup, with Jesse Minter of the town who made Bo Nix and the Broncos offense look like anything other than themselves, although that's kind of been the case through 3 weeks, period. But certainly, Jesse Minter, I've said it before, I'll say it again, is going to be a head coach next year. And that defense, they play all zone pretty much. They mess with your head if you're a quarterback, a young one or a veteran quarterback. Look at Geno Monday night last week where he threw three picks. Tom Brady on headset was not preventing Geno Smith from throwing three picks against his own defense where he was constantly seeing ghosts. So that's what you would start Jackson Dart against. But you got to do it somehow and some way. And whether it's now or whenever, it has to be soon because I'm with you. And this is not just sour grapes, Frank, as a guy who had Malik Nabers in fantasy. Because I'm going to tell you right now, I am never going to be the person that brings my fantasy gripes to this show and somehow dictate the rundown with what I was hoping for from my fantasy performance yesterday.
But do we have a screenshot? Do we have a screenshot, Russ, of Andrew losing?
Throw Malik Nabers the ball a couple of times, man. Just a few times.
By the way,
dude,
before we move on,
can we just mention drinking a beer? Just give me something.
Can we just mention one time what has happened to the Chiefs? They're so boring. They're so bad to watch. Like, the Giants just outbatted them, right? They were just miserable. But I was watching a Chiefs team going, what happened to the Chiefs team that was fun? What happened to Patrick Mahomes throwing 50 touchdowns? This is awful football to watch. That was a terrible Sunday night game. And The Giants were a majority of that, but the Chiefs played into that too. That is not a fun team to watch right now. Good for them to get a win, but it ain't good for them either.
No, not at all. Coming up, friend of the program, Greg Rosenthal from NFL Daily will be here. Also coming up, is Brian Callahan on the hot seat? And an update from Minnesota on Carson Wentz and J.J. McCarthy. That's right around the corner. You're watching Inside Coverage. All right, so I'm going to make an admission. When I'm not listening to Inside Coverage, and hi, it's Andrew, we're back on Inside Coverage. And yes, sometimes I do listen to the show, admittedly. I don't know if I'm just trying to get, like, you know, the numbers up or whatever. But when I'm not, and I'm listening to a non-Yahoo podcast, I listen to NFL Daily, of course, from the NFL Media Group, hosted by the great Greg Rosenthal, who joins us now on Inside Coverage. Thanks for coming over to the other side of the street, buddy.
Appreciate it. And it's a little intimidating being on a show that you host because you're the best at what you do. It's just good to, you're a real host, you know. I'm just impersonating one. You make it happen.
Oh, stop it. You're a mensch, and the feeling is mutual. And I'm not kidding. I've always listened to your show, and I listen to it. This is kind of weird for me though, because I've told you this before. I listen to the show usually on 1.75 because there's so much content you got to cram into a day. And like when I'm working out, I want to listen to the whole show. And so I listen to your 1.75. And so like talking to you now where you're talking at a normal speed, or even, you know, we hung out in Japan, for those that don't know, like we posted some photos. Greg and I went to sumo. We went to baseball in Tokyo over the summer as well. Like sitting there having a beer, I'm like, is my beer really kicking in? Like what? Your voice sounds different. How slowly are you talking? And I realize I'm just not listening to you in 1.75.
Yeah, I can only imagine how annoying it sounds that fast. But yes, I've gotten a little California cool over the years. But no, I think it's just you make me sound like a crazy person. You know, I don't mind that. Now I've gotten over it, and I listen to some podcasts that fast too, like 1.5.
Yeah, sometimes you just got to blow through stuff. So let's blow through here week two. I'm in Cleveland right now. I'm living in Andre Schmidt and Myles Garrett and Grant Delpit world right now. I have not caught up on everything, but by the time the show airs, I will have caught up with everything. If I had asked you right now, who is the best team in the NFL? What would you say?
Okay. Well, the Ravens come to mind, but we got to see what happens here. You just watched the Packers for four quarters up close, and they have things to work on offense. But assuming their offensive line can get healthy, I believe that defense is so good that long term, they're probably what sticks in my head first alongside the super quarterback teams, Bills and Ravens.
So you have them over the Eagles after a resounding win over the Rams and a comeback win the second half, like Jalen's actually throwing passes beyond 10 yards. And they look like the bully again that we saw on their amazing run last year after the bye. So you have the Packers over the Eagles.
Couple things with the Eagles this year. I mean, how different is it if, you know, one of those kicks doesn't get blocked and the Rams win that game? I think we can look at things more soberly. They obviously have the personnel to make it happen. I think they'll be better in December than they are now. You're asking right now. But right now, it still is one good half. And that one good half did not include Saquon Barkley running the ball particularly well or the pass rush being, you know, particularly good. Jalen Carter was better in that game. Jordan Davis has been good overall this season, not just blocking kicks. But those are two major factors to me. The run game's been inefficient, and the pass rush has just been eh. So, I mean, they're up there. They're the defending champs. They look great. But if we're just talking about 2025, what we've seen so far, they look more like the 2024 Eagles from September, which clearly didn't matter in the long run.
Right.
They looked like a mediocre team for four games, and then they really kicked it into overdrive.
Yeah, I've told the story a couple of times. So I saw the Eagles last year after their bye, right? That was the game Sirianni's yelling at the fans in Philadelphia. They beat the Browns. Browns coulda, woulda, shoulda that day, but they didn't. The Eagles eventually won the game. But we walked out of there going, this team's not that good. I mean, they're good, but this isn't. I mean, Sirianni
was supposedly getting on the same page during the bye with Hurts, and there were people calling for Sirianni's head, yelling at the fans. Didn't certainly help that. And then I saw them again, and I think you might have been there, the Sunday night game, Eagles-Rams, where Saquon went nuts and had 300 yards from scrimmage that game in L.A., and I'm like, this team is a bully. I mean, they are. It was a totally different team. And then we saw that team in the postseason as well. I think that team is there. They just haven't figured it out entirely offensively. I know that they're going to be, we're a long ways from January. They're going to be an amazingly difficult out in January. I also think the Packers, having seen them in person yesterday, they kind of needed that. And just listening to Matt LaFleur today on Monday, I mean, it looked like his dog died, honestly. But I think it's a kick in the rear that they need, because there were so many little things that they didn't do right yesterday. I'm not saying they took the Browns lightly. They had a 10-0 lead with 4 minutes to play. They should have won the game. It collapsed at the end. But I think that they're going to look back on this game and say it was kind of a blessing.
Absolutely. I think this early part of the season, it's figuring out what you can do, what you can't do. That Rams game was devastating, for instance, for Rams fans, for my daughter, you know, for the team. You know, Sean McVay is 1-6 against the Rams and has an astronomical winning percentage against the rest of the NFL. But there were a lot of things in that game that I think they can take as positives that will travel long term. And when I think about the teams that have recently been better in December in general than they were at the beginning of the season and playing well into the playoffs, you know, like the Patriots back in the Brady Patriots days used to do, the Ravens are always on that list. They're a team that figures things out. The Eagles in their good seasons have really figured things out late in the season. Obviously there was that one collapse year. The Rams are another team that figures things out late in the season. I think the Packers do have to show they are a young team, even though they have a lot of continuity. They kind of have to show that they are a team in this defense and their offense. They haven't really been in that many big time games and figured out how to build throughout the course of the season. So that is one test that they will have, but I do still feel confident that they are going to roll for the most part in the regular season.
Yeah, Packers are going to get Christian Watson back. He was there on the sideline yesterday. He was working out before the game as well. Eventually you're going to get, you know, Reed back. It could be December before Reed truly gets back. Late November, I guess, would be the earliest. And they're not going to run into the Browns defense every week. Browns defense has allowed 172 rush yards in three games. And that the pressure of keeping a back end chip on Myles Garrett, Matt LaFleur admitted, sometimes they had three guys there. It took away from their checkdown game. It sped everything up, and the Browns had five sacks. They could have had six, actually. One of them was taken back when LaFleur threw a red challenge flag to say that there were too many men on the field. And what they were doing was they were running to the line. They were basically going no huddle, trying to prevent the Browns from substituting and bringing in Myles Garrett on third down. And over and over and over again, and a few times it worked, and they drew that penalty for too many men on the field. Curiously, again, back to the best team in the NFL conversation, where would you put the Bills and where would you put the Chargers?
Okay. So it's so unfair to put the Bills below the Ravens, but right. On a neutral field, I'm still taking what the Ravens could do. And I would probably put the Chargers and the Bills, not in that order, Bills first, like underneath them as like the best AFC contenders. I think the Chargers are doing a lot with a relative little on the defensive side of the ball in terms of their personnel. It gets thin real quick now without Khalil Mack in the lineup, and they will get him back. But they're so well coached. And Herbert, I think on Sunday was maybe the first time where you really missed Rashawn Slater. And I know he made up for it with like the best, you know, throw that you'll ever want to see in the fourth quarter. And in general, his pocket movement is incredible. But asking him to be a superhero like that week after week is going to be difficult. So I am curious how it's all going to play out. But they are balanced. And that's what you want to look for. Like in any given week, their offense or their defense could win them the game.
I'm talking to Greg Rosenthal, host, friend of the program, of course, and host of NFL Daily. The kicker pendulum swinging back the other way yesterday was fascinating. I think it was needed. It had to happen. It was inevitable. The idea that we go from, oh yeah, 65 yards, easy, to no, you know what? The guys can get kicks blocked as well. And we had all those blocks, in a matter of minutes. And then, you know, a guy who missed a kick week number one. Andre Schmidt hits the kick week number three, 55 yards, or Younghoe Koo. You know, the fact that they cut him and then John Parker Romo misses a bunch of kicks and the Falcons get blown out. Like, of all the storylines yesterday, that Falcons Panthers score, I did not see that coming.
I didn't. And it was one of the stranger ways for it to happen as well. You know, you get a pick six, you get a couple of defensive big plays, you get a couple of missed kicks. And it's not like the Panthers went up and down the field on them. Like, Bryce Young had 150 yards. They had 250 total. But it is a reminder, man, it is early. And that's why you just have to find some wins in this weird early time of year before you become what you're going to be, so that you have some in your pocket. And for teams, let's say like the 49ers that are 3-0 right now, but have a scoring differential of plus 10 and a ton of injuries and Nick Bosa's out. The more of these wins that you can find early, that while you figure out who you're going to be, because you can almost feel the backslide coming for this team, but it doesn't mean that they're not going to be a problem later in the season. You look at their schedule, they've stacked these three wins. Like, you don't have to give them back. And so you can get better while you're still winning ugly games. I think the 49ers are a good example of that.
Yeah. As we try to figure out who these teams are, you're getting ready to go to Ireland here for week number four, Dublin, which is going to be amazing. First ever NFL game in Dublin. And you get the Steelers and the Vikings. And I don't know that I know who either of those teams are. The Steelers, you watched the game because, you know, they played your Patriots. They beat your Patriots. If the Patriots hang on to the football, the Steelers are going over there 1-2.
Right. And if the Jets could win a game that they dominated and really had every right to win in week one, like, who knows
the Steelers team.
But that's also, you've watched it in the AFC North. It's probably driven you crazy over the years. Like, this is Mike Tomlin's formula. Lose by 190 yards like every week and so somehow win the game. I do think we know who the Vikings defense is on balance, which is one of the toughest defenses to prepare for in the league. And you better be ready. And that's a fascinating chess match. And it made Aaron Rodgers look really bad when they were in London a year ago. I think that was really the beginning of the end of his time with the Jets. So I'm curious about the rematch, Brian Flores versus Aaron Rodgers.
I am as well. And the Vikings, as we sit here on Monday evening, let's assume it's going to be Carson Wentz. If the Vikings win over there, we already started this conversation last week. No one is calling for the end of the JJ McCarthy era before it ever happened. But like, what if Carson Wentz is 2-0 heading into Tottenham? Week five.
I would be surprised at this point if JJ McCarthy plays in that game against the Browns
in London.
Tottenham. Yes. I don't expect him to play. In fact, Kevin O'Connell did say after the game that it's going to be Carson Wentz. And I thought the fact that he said that so quickly, if it was a veteran quarterback, like Kirk Cousins a few years ago, you play out the week, you see if he can get better, even if he's just out of a walking boot. But that's not where they're at. I think, not that it was a convenient injury, but there's a bye week after those two games overseas, and I think they want to give JJ McCarthy all the time to like mentally and physically recover from that rough start. And yeah, if Carson Wentz keeps winning, man, that would be an interesting conversation. But I think me and you both know eventually he's going to have a Sam Darnold in the last 2 weeks of the season type moment, except it's going to be worse. Like, the highs aren't going to be as high. And I think the bad moments will probably be worse.
Yeah. And speaking of head scratching moments, before we let you go here, as we sit here again on Monday evening, Brian Daboll is leaving the door open to a quarterback change for week number four. Watching Sunday night, that last red zone drive, I joked on Twitter, and snark is not analysis, and I kind of regret it as soon as I hit send. But they're going to make a 30 for 30 on that red zone drive one day where he threw three balls away in the back of the end zone, including on fourth down. There is no way they go back. Or is there?
No, it's Jackson
to Russell. Dart. It's over, isn't it?
It's over. And, you know, justice for Snark. I want more Siciliano Snark.
But like, you know what I'm saying? Because you and I have talked about this off the air. I feel like on Twitter, X, call it whatever you may, Threads, Blue Sky, wherever you get your snark and analysis, that the football watching world, as we collectively sit on the couch and type with our thumbs, Like, there is a race to get the best one-liner out.
Yes.
Or to come up with a meme. Memes are not analysis, friends. They're a low-hanging sophomoric fruit right there. You know what I'm saying? But I did regret when I hit snark, hit the snark button there. I mean, look, Russell's a great quarterback, but that you can't just look at your fans and say, that's the best we can do. But it comes after a 450-yard effort the previous week.
Right. I thought they were going to go to Jackson Dart in week two. And I think he watched the week one tape, which wasn't as bad for Russell Wilson as you would have thought. And I wouldn't be surprised, knowing the history of that building, whether he was even maybe talked out of going to Jackson Dart as early as week two. Then he goes out, has a monster game against the Cowboys, who's turned every quarterback they've played against, you know, into the best quarterback in the league. They're just like, they fix what ails you. And he plays great. But last night, like that sequence, it was depressing because he's had a great career. And I started thinking, like, could that be the last sequence of his career? Like, he might be a backup on another team later this year. Does he even make sense on the Giants? Like, would someone want Russell Wilson as a backup, and Jameis Winston becomes their backup? The last sequence actually wasn't the saddest moment. It was the RPO that Jackson Dart wasn't in for, where Russell kept it and kind of stumbled. And I was just like, oh, this is how it ends, even for the greats.
Yeah, and I kind of had the same feeling for Flacco. And I don't think that Dylan Gabriel was on the verge of coming in yesterday. Matter of fact, I know he wasn't. But there were plenty of people that wanted to see it. And you're like, you're going to bring him in the pouring rain against the Packers, down 10-0 in the fourth quarter. That's not fair. But the flip side of it was, I don't want this to be the end for Flacco. Mm. And, you know, they got him into position. He got them into position. And they hit the game-winning kick. And you fight to see another day on the road in Detroit against a very good team before heading to London. As mentioned, you're going to Ireland here. What can we promo? What are you doing over there?
Oh, I'll be doing some color commentating. Doing my Siciliano in the booth.
That's amazing.
For Talk Sport, and helping out a little bit with Sky Sports and their halftime. And I'm excited. But it's called NFL Daily. We got to keep it rolling daily. So we'll be doing shows from over there and over here and hybrid. Appreciate you having me, Andrew.
But you're doing Dublin and then London for Browns Vikings, right?
Yes, we're getting away with this. It almost feels like, you know, ESPN is coming soon. So let's have as much fun as we can while we can. I don't know what's around the corner, Andrew. None of us do, but like, let's have some fun.
Why is Concur sending this back?
Why
can't I get this approved? Just send it again. Why do I need to itemize the tax in my hotel bill? Why? Why? Inside baseball. Greg Rosenthal, listen to NFL Daily from NFL Media. Daily, hence the name of the show, as I do, on whatever speed you like. Safe travels. I will I will see you in London.
Yes, can't wait.
It's Inside Coverage, everybody, on week number 3, heading into week number 4 on Yahoo. If you're watching on yahoosports.tv, we thank you. You can also watch on the Yahoo Sports app or on YouTube. It's me, it's Frank, it's Charles, and for now, it's Brian Callahan. And Frank, I want to tip the cap to you, although, I mean, tip the cap by saying this is a bad team, but you were the one who was saying keep an eye on this one in Tennessee, that something could be brewing here. Once again, I do not root for nor call for coaches to be fired. But the Titans didn't look good yesterday. They lose again. They are 0-3. They get the 0-3 Texans this week. It's not that they lost. It's how they lost, with mismanaging timeouts late in the second quarter and taking to delay a game and then giving up a score the other way for Indianapolis. And it's also with what Colts wide receiver Michael Pittman said after the game. He said that, quote, saw it on the pregame intros. They, meaning the Titans, kind of looked a little sluggish. They were kind of walking around. Nobody was really bouncing. Right then and there, we all sat there and we were like, they don't want to play today. Frank, when your team
doesn't want to play week three, at least according to the other team, which is kind of sort of all that matters, that's a bad sign.
Yeah, and I'm not sure Michael Pittman is the body language police chief all of a sudden, but when your opponents see that and then you play like that, like, yeah, that ain't good. And nothing about the Titans has been good. If you point to, okay, what has Brian Callahan done to lead you to believe he's really the guy to turn around the team? The answer is nothing. Like, you go back to last year, they were 3-14. There was no sign of improvement, but everybody said, oh, Will Levis stinks. That's why. Like, well, let's give Brian Callahan another year. And okay, that's fine. But you know who he is, fellas? He's Matt Eberflus. He's a guy who you probably shouldn't have brought back, but you did. And now you're going to waste the rookie year of your number one overall pick. Because go back to week one. What was the talking point out of the Titans game in week one? Brian Callahan didn't know the rule on the catch that he didn't challenge. And nobody challenged him in the booth on that, by the way. That Callahan's like, no, you needed to get the foot down too. That's not it. We know that. We're doing a podcast, all right? We're not NFL head coaches. We knew that, and Brian Callahan didn't. That's not a good look. And then the fiasco on Sunday with the field goal at the end, and it's a 57-yarder already. You're kind of settling for that anyway. You take a delay of game and out 62 and your guy misses. These are just operational issues. This is football 101 type of stuff that head coaches not only have to know, but it shouldn't even be in question. I don't see any progress from the Titans over Brian Callahan's 20 games in which he's 3-17. I don't see Cam Ward getting better. I don't see Calvin Ridley's a ghost. Not like nothing is good right now about the Titans. And at some point, they just have to say, just like the Bears did last year with Eberflus, they just have to say, this just isn't working. We got to go in a different direction, even if it's a little late. Like, it's bad for Callahan. It's bad for the Titans. There's nothing good coming out of there right now.
Yeah, I don't, you know, it's getting a little Nathaniel Hackett-y right now. Mm-hmm. Like, it's starting to feel like that. And I told you guys before, you know, when we talked about this, I felt like it was getting toxic fast in Tennessee, and that has not relented in any way, shape, or form. And, you know, again, when I talk about it feeling like it's getting Nathaniel Hackett-y, it's some of the game management stuff here, right? I mean, that's
it. Yeah.
Coaches, they get disrobed very quickly in front of teams when players stare at their head coaches and go, he doesn't know how to run a game. Like, he doesn't know. We're talking about clock management. We're talking about play calling in certain situations. We're talking about, hey, you know what field goals you can or can't make in certain scenarios. And I think it's fair right now to question what has gone on with the Tennessee Titans and whether or not Callahan has been fully prepared in all these situations. And the one thing I really worry about, if I'm Mike Borgonzi, the new general manager there, number one, Callahan's not my hire, right? So that's not my guy. And number two, I'm staring at Cam Ward and I'm saying, okay, well, are we going to see some progress from 1 week to the next? You know, are we going to see, and I, you know, look, I'm not expecting the world out of Cam Ward right away, but I will say this, there've been a couple of things where you're like holding on to the ball, kind of like you did at Miami. Some of the, you know, negative aspects of the scouting report, there's a little bit of hero ball that's still occurring. There's, you know, even, you know, look, his first touchdown pass of his NFL career comes on a play where he throws across his body. It was absolutely insane throw that I don't think anybody thought he should have made, and he connects on it great, but you don't want to see him do it again. It's just, there's this multitude of problems that I think are starting to crop up. And when they begin to affect the development of Cam Ward moving forward, whether it's the offensive line, the efficiency of the wide receiving core, which, you know, for the most part, particularly amongst the veterans, Calvin Ridley, it's been terrible. I think you got a question. Are we hurting Cam Ward at this point? Or can we make a change here and effectively at least get some development by the end of the season and then make a decision and enter into a coaching search that's going to be Cam Ward centered?
Yeah, it's interesting here because, again, I'm not trying to get anyone fired, but you always ask, okay, if you make a move here, then where do you go? His dad's not going to coach the team if you fire his son. His dad has been an NFL head coach, well, a college head coach. His dad could be the head coach, right?
Sure.
But that's not going to happen.
No.
Your Denard Wilson certainly is a possibility as the defensive coordinator, but how does that help your quarterback, who you're really trying to you're trying to, not to your point, Frank, waste his rookie season? So what are we doing here? And, you know, fans can always say, well, get rid of this guy, get rid of that guy. Okay, But what's your plan after that? It's only week three. And that's why I don't think anything is happening. Look, the Jets pulled the plug early last year, and Robert Saleh didn't help them really any at all. Matter of fact, it hurt them, I would argue. So doing something rash like this seems extreme and seems a bit early, but you're right. And I think it's a great analogy there. The Nathaniel Hackett analogy, it does feel like it is going quickly in that direction. And a lot of today's press conference was Brian Callahan trying to defend some of those decisions that everybody was questioning and some of the stuff that was said in the Colts locker room after the game. They are not in any way questioning, however, what's going on in LA. The Chargers are 3-0. The Chargers beat the Broncos. And here's what's great about the Chargers being 3-0. They're one of six teams that's 3-0, is the fact that, Charles, they are 3-0 against three teams that are in the division. That has not happened since Rex Grossman's Bears went to the Super Bowl and lost in Miami to Peyton Manning and the Colts. That is opening 3-0, where all of them are massive in the standings, division victories. Chargers now, as mentioned, get the Giants, but Justin Herbert is truly playing at an MVP level. And Greg Roman is all of a sudden becoming a pass-happy offensive coordinator. Go figure.
Yeah, you know, and I got some egg on my face because I was looking at the Chargers coming in with some of the issues in the preseason, and I thought this could be the team that you know, it falls flat on its face, and we're expecting so much from them. I'm going to learn my lesson at some point with Jim Harbaugh. I swear, anywhere he goes, he has success, and he also has the ability to be a chameleon too. I mean, look, I mean, go back to the 49ers days, right? I mean, he had success with Alex Smith. Really, he and Greg Roman turned Alex Smith's career back around. He transitioned into Colin Kaepernick, had Kaepernick playing at the highest level of his entire career, gets to the Super Bowl with him. You know, he's had Andrew Luck. I mean, just the multitude of quarterbacks that he succeeded with. I felt like when he took the job, Herbert was going to be in good hands. I did not know how quickly he would get Herbert back to sort of that MVP level that we thought he could reach early in his career. And that's where he is right now. And, you know, again, Mike Williams, the wideout that they were depending on being their ex, retires on the first day of camp. And I thought, okay, well, you're going to go get Keenan Allen, but how much is really left there? Well, I guess a lot. Because right now, Keenan Allen, Quentin Johnston has turned into what I believe he can be a true number one receiver, deep threat. Ladd McConkey can do it all over the field. Just everything they've brought to the table has been so impressive between Greg Roman and Jim Harbaugh. And I think, you know, Frank talks about, you know, a coach of the year candidate. It's not like they haven't dealt with some adversity as well, losing your franchise left tackle. You know, I think right now Harbaugh's got to be in that conversation too, considering the level that Herbert's playing at and them being 3-0 in the division this quickly.
Yeah, Harbaugh's great. Like, he's one of the best coaches of football walking the planet, whether he's in college or the pros, it doesn't matter. The results are there. And you guys both touched on this. I think that what you've seen out of the Chargers, I came into the season thinking, you know, Jim Harbaugh's a run it type of guy. He's an old school guy. He wants to line up. He wants to pound you. Yeah, Justin Herbert got more pass attempts as last season went on, but still at the root of what Jim Harbaugh wants to do, he is an old school guy. But I think he just said, you know what? We got Justin Herbert. We're throwing the heck out of this thing. And they sure have. From week one on, when they just play action the heck out of the Kansas City Chiefs, they realize Justin Herbert is our difference maker and we're going to get everything out of him. Again, it's so silly to talk about it in late September. And Josh Allen's awesome. Lamar's awesome. But yeah, I think Justin Herbert so far is the MVP just because he's played at that level without Rashawn Slater, the highest paid offensive tackle in NFL history. Najee Harris was out all of camp. And you talked about Mike Williams retires unexpectedly. They have dealt with adversity, but the one thing they've had is Herbert just making play after play after play. And that throw he made to Keenan Allen to tie the game yesterday. It's that game of horse, like who even, maybe Mahomes, maybe Josh Allen, that might be it. Like, I don't even know if those guys could do it. It was just a trick ridiculous. Shot, he gets out of the rush. He gets out of the rush. He somehow adjusts his arm angle to get it past the defender. He hits Keenan Allen in a window that it's this big, like, right? Like, I was blown away when I saw the replay. It was good watching it live, and it was unbelievable watching the replay. It was just one of those plays not many guys can make. Justin Herbert's awesome. The Chargers are really, really good. And if they keep, if they win the AFC West, he's going to get some MVP votes, including maybe one from one of our friends sitting with us on the panel. Who knows? But he's having that kind of season, and he's absolutely in a top tier of, like, we could list on one hand the top tier of guys in the NFL, a quarterback. And Justin Herbert's in there now. He's absolutely he's in the same tier as Allen, as Jackson, as Mahomes, as Burrow when he's healthy. Like, he's that dude.
I've watched that throw maybe 15 times because I had the same reaction. Like when I first saw it, like, wait, he did what? Rewind that.
Unbelievable.
And I've watched it over and over and over again. I just want to double back to your point that Charles, you had made about Quentin Johnston. Maybe he's being a number one. Maybe he's settling into that role now, which is what you hope for when you draft a guy in the first round. But he has never looked like that guy. So much so, I remember I was at Chargers camp, not this summer, but last summer. So maybe the first week of Jim Harbaugh's first camp, where it's pretty, you know, everyone knows they're churning the bottom third of that roster almost daily, or bottom five spots on that roster almost daily. He'd get a guy in there, get him out of there, so on and so forth every day. Rinse, wash, repeat. He had Quentin Johnston as a gunner on the punt team.
Yep.
Like, you're supposed to be the number one, and he's out there as a gunner on the punt team. Then they go to 7-on-7. First snap, Herbert hits him in the breadbasket, and he dropped it. And I'm like, this is going to end badly. And this is going to end quickly as well. Like, he's the number one pick that the new coach comes in and makes an example of and sends packing real early, right? Like, no one's safe here. We're getting rid of that guy. He's already on special teams. Get him out of here. Nope. Look at how it's turned out. And now they're undefeated. And now they're going to beat the Giants. I don't care who's the starting quarterback. Maybe not. Look, maybe that's a surprise game. They have to go from west to east, and who knows? But
don't make declarations, man.
4-0. Yeah, Packers Browns, right? Yeah.
Hey, oh no, yeah, right, exactly. Let's be careful.
We're talk Packers Browns. We can talk Packers Browns here real quick. The Browns are the best defense in the NFL, and I know I'm a homer. They've given up 172 yards on the ground. Right? They gave up 7 yards in the second half against. Man, 7 yards in the second half total against the Bengals, right? Week number one. Week number two, they gave up 36 yards rushing to Lamar and to Derrick Henry. They've given up in total 172 rushing yards and 204 yards of offense per game. They had 5 sacks yesterday, and Myles Garrett had only a half sack. They actually had a 6th sack called back because Matt LaFleur, who was playing substitution games the entire day in an effort to keep Myles Garrett off the field, got the Browns on a 12 men on the field situation because Devin Bush was about that far from getting back to the sideline. And so they wiped out a Carson Schwesinger sack. He later got his first career sack. So Browns defense is phenomenal. Defense travels. They now have to travel to Detroit to face a very good Lions team who is playing on Monday night in Baltimore. But Kevin Stefanski made the point today that Myles Garrett is the defensive player of the year for perpetuity. And he said that when asked, have you ever seen Miles get triple teamed, which is what the Packers repeatedly did Sunday? And he said, yeah, of course. It happens all the time. The difference this year is that with Mason Graham and Malik Collins that build that line, with Isaiah McGuire taking his game to another level of the other defensive end, Alex Wright doing the same, is that when he gets triple teamed, everyone else is going to win their one-on-ones. And they're whooping people. Go back and look at some of the tape last week, Malik Collins against Tyler Lindebaum. Woof, wasn't fair. And some of the moves yesterday, the same thing. Now, on the Packers side of it, they lost 2 offensive linemen. Zach Tompa, if you go, he lasted 1 play. You then lose Aaron Banks at left guard. They were down 2 all linemen. It showed. And they clearly were, I don't say they were overlooking the game, but Rasheed Walker talked about we're going to go undefeated last week. Mm-mm.
LaFleur not happy about that. LaFleur is not happy about that.
Yeah, Matt LaFleur is not happy about that in any way at all. But honestly, I think, and I said this to Rosenthal too, like I think it's what the Packers needed. I think they're going to look back on this and say it's a good thing.
And not to step on your foot, but real quick, like number one, Garrett has reached Aaron Donald level of disruption. That's where he's at. Like that's the guy. He's the dude now. I think he's on a plateau unto himself. And real quick, just on that offense, I'm telling you, I was looking at the depth chart today and I thought to myself, I don't know what quarterback is ultimately going to be there. But when I sit there and I go, Quinshon Judkins, Jerry Jeudy, Cedric Tillman, Isaiah Bond, Harold Fannin. That's maybe Dylan Sampson. Maybe if Njoku's in the picture in the future, from a skill position standpoint, whatever quarterback takes over for Joe Flacco in the future is, I mean, the table's full. It's full. There's nothing but weapons there.
Yeah. And until, look, there's some teams in the NFL right now that I don't think that anybody worries about playing in New Orleans Saints. I don't really think people get that scared about the Miami Dolphins at this point. People don't want to play the Browns because of that defense. Well, you talked about Andrew, and you called this out before the season started, that hey, this is the best defense in football. I think there are some candidates with them. Packers, I still think, are up there. But nobody wants to play the Browns because, you know, it, like, they're going to turn off our water in the run game for sure. And now we're talking about this game is probably going to be, we're going to get 13 points. Maybe breaks don't go our way like they didn't go against the Packers yesterday. So, yeah, the Browns are one of those teams. I don't think they're going to have a good record at the end of the year. Hey, nobody want to play them. Nobody wants to play the Browns because of that defense.
Not at all. And they're doing it without MJ Emerson and Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoah. So no JOK and no MJ Emerson, and it is that good. But you got to score some points, and obviously DeJuan Jones' injury, huge today. They are now down both tackles. Fingers crossed Jack Conklin can make it back. Fingers crossed that you come back as well. We thank you for listening to and for watching Inside Coverage. Charles and Frank here all the time. I'm just the conductor. Jory Epstein back later this week as well. Thank you. Like it. Share it. Tell your friends about it. Watch us coming up on Tuesday, where we'll look back on the Monday night game. For Charles and Frank, I am Andrew Siciliano. So long, everybody.